A lot of questions are being asked about medical ethics right now. We've seen what happened in Italy. We're starting to see what's happening in New York. People on ventilators. Should they stay on ventilators? Who gets a ventilator if there's a shortage? And really tough decisions that have to be made about what patients are going to get a chance at life and what patients are not. We're joined by Dr. Kelly Michelson. She is the director of the Center for Bioethics and Medical Humanities at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. Perfect person to ask about this. Ethically, how are those decisions being made?
Thanks for having me on today. This is an incredibly important topic, so I'm glad we're having this conversation. As far as ventilators go, the first thing to say is that it's imperative that we as a community make sure that we do everything we can to utilize the ventilators that we have. So this is about sharing resources across institutions. We've seen that already with Lurie Children's giving ventilators to Northwestern and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the first tier effort. It's important to use the resources we have. But of course, many people are worried, as we've seen things get worse and worse in New York, about the possibility that we may not have enough ventilators for all the people that need it. And so that's when even more difficult decisions are going to have to be made, potentially here in Chicago. Hopefully we'll never get to that point.
But since it may be inevitable, how are those decisions being made?
There's a couple of things that go into that process and that calculus. And I should step back and say that every institution around Chicago and across the country is thinking about this and thinking about it together. In Chicago, I've formed an organization that we call the COVID-19 Chicago Bioethics Coalition, and it includes bioethicists and clinicians from across the Chicagoland area sharing their thoughts, sharing their policies that they're developing with an effort to try to make policies as consistent as possible. So there's a lot of thought going into this, and a lot of it is based on work that's already been done. People have been thinking about how to deal with this kind of issue for several decades, spurred by the various other pandemics that we've seen in the world, including things like SARS and MERS and H1N1.
And this pandemic is very different than those pandemics because this is global and there are going to be a lot more cases, right?
Yeah, that seems to be the case. I mean, certainly in the United States, this pandemic is far worse than what we saw with SARS or MERS and even H1N1. So I do think this pandemic is demonstrating itself to be different from those that we've seen recently. Of course, you can go back to the early 1900s, 1918 to 1920, when we had the flu that wiped out an enormous number of people died during that worldwide pandemic.
Right.
That may end up being worse than this one.
So as this wave heads toward us, who's going to be making these life and death decisions? Is it the doctor and staff who are attending to the patient or someone else?
Great question. So first to say is that hospitals are trying to develop policies so that this happens in a uniform, consistent way. And that's really important because we want it to happen as much as possible the same. And part of those policies include taking the decisions away from the frontline providers, so like the doctors who are really right in front of a patient, as much as possible. So how is that done? A lot of organizations are planning to have committees of people that collect information about the patients who might need ventilators to get objective information about how they're doing and whether they're likely to benefit from a ventilator. And that group of people is using information that they collect from the medical record largely to try to figure out who might get the remaining ventilators.
I read somewhere there's a point system which essentially grades a patient based on their viability, their age, their general health. Is that true?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So first of all, the goal would be for those point systems to be created using a foundation of accepted ethical principles. So starting with that point, every life is worth saving and we want to save as many lives as possible. And so the point systems that you're talking about are an effort to try to predict who would survive if they were put on a ventilator. If we have a patient who's highly unlikely to survive, then we have to ask ourselves, is this going to achieve the goal of saving as many lives as possible.
So we're talking to Dr. Kelly Michelson. She's a professor of bioethics at Feinberg School of Medicine. How big of an issue is the age of the patient?
Many people argue that in addition to having the goal of saving as many lives as possible, that it's important for us to think about saving as many life years as possible, or some people think about it as life cycles. We may be able to do that with a younger person more so than an older person, but also thinking about a person's long-term survivability.
There's been a lot of discussion, Dr. Michelson, about how this virus is impacting people along racial lines, especially here in Chicago. We've become a national headline about the number of African Americans who are getting this compared to the general population. And there are concerns, as there always are, that those individuals are going to be treated differently because of their race. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, this is another really important issue. And it goes back to this idea that when we come up with these policies, they start from a framework that every life is worth saving. That's crucial. And it's also crucial that we make sure that as hospitals are creating these policies, that they make a point to say that there are certain characteristics that should not influence this kind of decision-making at all. And those include things like gender and race, ethnicity, religion, wealth, citizenship, social status, gender identity. So this is a huge, important point. And I think it's tragic that in Chicago, we're seeing a disproportionate number of African Americans get COVID-19 and get very sick with COVID-19. And I think it's important to note that there are probably other reasons why some people get sick and some people don't, related to genetics, related to how much virus they're exposed to. But given the fact that there seems to be a connection with having other health-related problems and getting very sick, the fact that we're seeing so many African Americans get sick makes me concerned that what we're seeing there is a reflection of health disparities in big portions of our community. That's a huge societal issue that I think we need to address.
We're talking to Dr. Kelly Michelson. She is the director of the Center for Bioethics and Medical Humanities at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. We have been talking about the very tough decisions that doctors have to make concerning the level of care patients can receive based on their pre-existing conditions, their overall health, and how badly they're affected by COVID-19. And doctor, you mentioned before that patients are assessed based on a points system. Let's go back and explain that. How does that work?
So many of these systems are using an initial point system to try to focus on who's going to have the best chance of surviving on a ventilator, and then incorporate other measures to try to get a sense for whether or not this person will have more longevity if they do survive. And there's other considerations, too, that people have been including in the policies. People who are essential workers in our society should have some priority. So who is an essential worker? I think that's a point of discussion. But they might include people like healthcare workers with the argument that if we save healthcare workers, we have people who will be able to save more people going forward. But there are certainly other people in our society that are considered essential, and those include really first responders. Some people talk about the importance of people who work in the grocery store as being essential workers. So I think that can be a broad consideration. And other people are even talking about whether or not pregnant people should be prioritized in some way. Again, with the thought that if you're supporting the life of someone who's pregnant, you're in fact supporting two lives and potentially many life years.
Yeah.
If those people, if that pregnant person survives.
Italy and now potentially New York are dealing with this. They've got patients who have been on ventilators, do not seem to be getting better on ventilators. And then the decision has to be made to take that person off the ventilator so somebody else can get on it. How is that decision being made?
Yeah, another great question and very difficult situation, particularly with COVID-19, where what we're seeing is patients on ventilators for a couple of weeks before they get better. But I think the idea here is that if you have a patient who is on a ventilator and has been on a ventilator for a period of time that gives that person the opportunity to demonstrate he or she is going to get better, or there's a chance that he or she will get better, but that's not being seen. So you have someone who's been on the ventilator for a while, or if their condition is deteriorating to the point where there's nothing else the ventilator can do, there's no other medicines, and in fact, just potentially this person could in fact have a cardiopulmonary arrest, meaning their heart stops or they just aren't getting enough oxygen into their body at any moment, then the question becomes, is that ventilator best used for that person who is likely to die? Or do we need to take that person off the ventilator and use that ventilator with someone who's not as sick and who has the potential to get better? So that's really the crux of the matter. And how do you figure that out is challenging. I think one option is to really kind of create some time frame around which you can see whether or not someone's benefiting. But in addition to that, I don't think it makes sense to make a clear time cutoff. So in other words, it doesn't make sense to me to say after 2 weeks, if this person isn't better, we're going to remove them from the ventilator. I think there's a need to look at the whole situation. If after a certain time, someone is continuing to deteriorate or there's nothing else that can be done for that person and they're really hanging on the fringes of life, and the likelihood of survival is extraordinarily small, that's the time when we need to think about whether or not that ventilator might be better used for someone else. That's crazy difficult decision, right? We're talking about healthcare workers at the bed space who have taken care of a patient for, potentially some time. And the idea that they might have to say, we're not going to succeed here is devastating, right? Doctors are trained to save lives. That's one of the main things that we're trained to do. We're trained to do other things too, but that's one of the main things. And it's devastating. And I think that speaks to the importance of palliative care and thinking about palliative care in this whole process. So it's crucial to say that if there's ever a time when we might take someone off a breathing machine or we might not have a breathing machine for someone, that it's essential that we continue to care for that patient and their family. And this means providing excellent palliative care and excellent support for those people who may not survive.
Well, I want to ask that question, too. There may be moments here where it's decided to be more merciful to take somebody off a ventilator. Would those decisions be the same, not in a pandemic situation, as they would in this situation?
Yeah, this is an excellent point. And it's true that doctors across the country are having to deal with this issue on a day-to-day basis, even besides COVID. So unfortunately, we can't cure everyone. And we often find ourselves in a situation where we have to think very hard about whether we're doing something for a person or to a person, and whether or not what we're doing is actually going to have a difference in whether or not they survive. And what it means to put them through it. Being on a breathing machine is not easy. And we hear reports from people who have been on breathing machines that they really suffer things like PTSD from being on it. Now, we do everything possible to avoid that. And patients receive sedation medicine, so they're sleeping or in what some people might call a medically induced coma when they're on breathing machines often. But there are times when they need to be awake, and those times can be traumatizing. And some people feel like, you know, what's going on is just beyond what they would ever want for themselves. And so decisions like that are made every day, regardless of COVID-19, when it comes to using this kind of resource that can be sometimes very difficult for patients.
Yeah,
and not what all patients would want. And I think that's the other thing to really consider, which is that many people choose, regardless of COVID-19, that they would never want to be put on a ventilator, that if they got so sick, that's just not something that they would want for themselves. because of how challenging it is and because they would never want to be in a situation where they would die on a breeding machine, that they would prefer to be at home surrounded by loved ones. And so I think it's also crucially important that every person and family think about that and think about that with, you know, with their doctor. What does it mean to be on a breeding machine? And if that's not something that you would want, to really think about that in advance is very important.
Dr. Kelly Michelson, thank you so much for your time.